Welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Free advertisement of the day?
Yeah.
What are we into?
I don't know. What are you into?
Four Winds Jewelers. They've been great. And I saw Carl Bott from the station in there. Apparently they've been advertisers since the station opened. Huh, who knew? And I love them. They fix all my watches. If you have any old watches, especially mechanical, you know, wind watches, Jim over there does all the fixing. And if you need your rings tipped or sized or any of that stuff, they do all the work in-house. And they do an excellent job, and the pricing is terrific. So that's Four Winds Jewelers on Hilltop Drive. Can't miss them. And so let's see. Let's do some tiny bit of housekeeping. The archives. The archives moved them, actually, because we had too many years. Goes back 15 years. So I scooted them all over to make room for the incoming 2026. And just so you know, they are free to access, free to listen to. They're just MP3 files. We hope you make use of them. I don't have everything grouped by category, but categories where I had enough shows to put them all on a one page. Wolves, pot, transgender stuff, Klamath, China, environmentalism. God knows there's plenty there. Shows with veteran focus, South Africa. I've got a ton of shows on South Africa, Islam, and then all the government and national security. I'll probably add this one. I don't know if I should add it to Enviro Craziness or government and national security. I think I'll add it to both
yeah,
pages.
You should.
So today we're, you know, it's funny. I've run into a couple people who have heard of this issue, but mind-blowingly, probably 95% of the public is completely unaware.
Anybody that's heard about
that, there is a looming gas crisis in California. So today we have with us in studio Mike Ariza, and then on a conference call we have Professor Michael Miché and Assemblyman Stan Ellis. So I have listed all of their bios and all of those things. Today is December 28th, 2025. And we hope you had a Merry Christmas, by the way. And unfortunately, we're going to ruin your new year before it even starts.
We're going to give you something to look forward to.
Oops. Yeah, sorry about that. Should have done something cheerful. So Mike was born in Fairfield, beautiful downtown metropolitan Fairfield, I'm sure, at that time. Raised in Vacaville, went to Vacaville High School. He was in the Navy, so shout out to you on the Navy service. Thank you for that. And you worked, I'm just going to summarize, you were at Chevron Oil Refinery. You were at Exxon Valero at the Benicia Refinery for a long time, and Flying J Refinery in Bakersfield. And now you're at California State Chico.
CSU Chico.
Professor Miché is the Associate Professor of Practice of Management and Organization. He's widely sought for his independent and objective perspective, exceptional consulting acumen. That's what we're tapping into today, his consulting acumen, boardroom skills, and direct Socratic data-driven client-centric style. Sure, say that really fast. Of addressing highly complex and critical strategic organizational, operational, and positioning issues, which obviously this is all of those things. He's been a member of the USC faculty since 1997, and he coordinates the USC's Marshall Management Consulting undergraduate and graduate curricula programs. I have his CV on there as a PDF if you would like to peruse. It's really pretty interesting. And then Assemblyman Stan Ellis. He is a farmer, local businessman, and community member with deep roots in the Central Valley. Grew up on a hog farm in South Dakota and worked to put himself through college at South Dakota School of Mines and Technology. And he graduated with a degree in mathematics, settled in Kern County, and has an extensive entrepreneurial career where he wandered into politics somehow.
Oops.
And discovered the joys of the California legislature. We'll leave that for another show. Haven't we all blundered into that? Not as deeply as poor Stan. So now that I've kind of laid out the cast of characters, I guess we should identify our voices, huh? So tell us something. Mike, where would you like to start? We'll go through where everybody wants to make sure we don't miss something.
Well, where to start? This has been going on for a while. I took interest in it when I heard the Valero was shutting down. So I'm farm myself and work at the university. It didn't really catch my attention until I heard Valero was shutting down. Valero is the most efficient refinery in the state.
And they supply a lot of California's supply.
Yeah, 10 to 11% of the gasoline, and they make another 12 to 14,000 barrels a day of jet fuel and diesel. And when they go down, we're going to lose about 10% of our supply. We're already right now with Phillips 66 is down, Marathon, Refinery Martinez. They're on 17,000 barrels a day of renewable diesel, but the 170,000 barrels a day of crude oil they used to bring in is shut down. So all the gasoline, all the jet fuel, the propane they make, it's gone. Rodeo Refinery converted over to renewable diesel. They're at rates of around 45,000 barrels a day of renewable diesel, but they also their gasoline, the jet fuel, everything they made, that's all gone. So with those two refineries down, we've lost 18 to 20% of the 38 million gallons a day that California still consumes of gasoline. And then Phillips 66 shut down on October 17th. They're in the final stages of that, so that's another 8 to 9%. And then Valero, originally they were going to shut down in April, but they're going to go ahead and apparently shut down in January as they canceled their crude oil contracts over 2 months ago.
Oh, wow.
So the state tried to get them to stay open, and they basically told the state, no, thank you, we're out of here. Valero makes about 10 to 11% of the gasoline that's coming into the state. So the total, with Valero going down, basically 40% of our gasoline jet and a huge percentage of our jet fuel and diesel is going to be coming from Singapore, South Korea, and from India.
And we can't import that because California has their own blend. Is that right?
Hold on, boys. We're jumping ahead.
Oh.
We need to identify the voices of everyone so that we can actually have a conversation and people will know who they are, because we don't know what they sound like either. But now that we've laid out some ugly math, let's bring in Professor Miche, who has 43 years of global management consulting experience, and in 43 years, I'm sure he's going to give this all an F. If we stick with the school theme, I think probably Gavin Newsom gets an F, yes?
Well, Gavin's grades aren't very good. This is Professor Miche, and thank you so much for having me on. It's a real pleasure to be with you today. It's a great way to start, right? I've been following this industry since 1973 when I was an undergraduate. So I got into energy economics during the energy crisis of 73 with the Arab nations' embargo of U.S. oil supplies. The United States, and just began studying it. I mean, it was just a great industry to study. And then, of course, I started my career on Wall Street and then went to KPMG, became a partner, and then ultimately ended up at USC when I retired from the partnership. So it's been a lifelong study of mine. I love the industry. I love the economics of the industry. It's really fascinating to me. And I think if there will be a textbook written on this, and it'll be called All the Wrong Moves made by California and the legislature, and in particular our current governor. You know, when you look at some of the statistics, and we'll get into those when you're ready, they're pretty dismal, and they could have been entirely avoided, okay? But nonetheless, we are where we're at, and I'll let my good friend Assemblyman Ellis take over from here.
Yeah, we mentioned the California legislature. Cue Stan Ellis. So, Assemblyman Ellis, how much fun are you having? Uh-oh, he's in the cone of silence.
I don't know that he's on the phone.
Oh.
You might want to...
Well, he's having so much fun, he's not on the phone. I mean...
we said California legislature, and he's like, oh, this must not be for me. I better get out of here. Oh, my God.
Called the wrong number.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll
get him.
Yeah, Mike's gonna text him. So tell me this: when you say that this is totally preventable, and you've been looking at it since I was 12, Have we teetered this close?
You're making me feel bad.
Yeah, but at least I was born. At least I was born then. You know, it's when they say, you know, 30 years ago, and they look at you with that deer in the headlights. You're like, oh my God, you're right. I was born like way before that. So when you say it was avoidable, avoidable recently or avoidable a long time ago? Like how long have we been marching toward the cliff?
Been marching toward the cliff for quite a while. When you began to see these refineries, we had over 40 of them at one time, right? Began to decline, and then somewhere around 2005 is when we shifted from being more in-state production to being more reliant on imports. So we were fairly consistent in our production, in our dependency on in-state production all the way up until about 2005-ish or so. And then it switched, and we began more dependency on imports, particularly from Saudi Arabia at that time, and which was our number one producer and our number one supplier of oil for a long, long time. And so we saw ourselves becoming more dependent on the imports from these foreign nations. At the same time, the population was increasing, the number of motor vehicles was increasing, and the number of refineries were decreasing. So, it became somewhat of alarming to us as 15, 20 years ago. But it really began sort of crystallizing in 2015, and then again in 2019, which are pretty significant years when you look at the history of oil and gasoline in our state. And so in 2019, I think a few of the alarms went off, but the legislature and the governor dismissed them. And then I know in 2022, some more alarms went off among the producers. They actually contacted the government and said, look, you know, this could be a very difficult situation moving forward. And in 2023, I personally informed the state legislature via a Senate hearing that we needed more production. So a lot of this was avoidable, and then we started seeing more and more harsh regulations being superimposed on the industry. So, things like that were happening.
So you're saying that the Saudi Arabia imports, that was just crude, or was that refined fuels?
Okay, it was crude.
Okay.
We didn't really start importing a lot of refined fuels until, say, the last 2-10 years, the increases of refined product has started to increase. And now, for 2025, they're at an all-time 20-year high. We've imported more gasoline from foreign sources in 2025 than we've had since, I think, 2004. So, and there's no abatement of that on the horizon. So we can, the only plan that the CEC has come forward with is importing more gasoline. That's it. They have nothing else to offer, and they haven't offered anything else to the people of California. And so they said, all right, we're going to increase more. Imports will increase. Yeah, port congestion will increase. Yeah, emissions will increase. And the price will increase. That's all we have to offer.
But what could go wrong?
So what could go wrong?
Right, what else?
What could go wrong when you have, three to five times more tankers on the Pacific Ocean coming to California in 2026 than you've had in 2024? What could go wrong? So, these are some of the issues we're going to look at, and we'll be happy to discuss these as we move forward.
Okay. And I heard a ding and a little bit of static. Sounds a wee bit like wind. So maybe Stan has blown in to join us.
Hi, everyone. This is Stan Ellis. How are you guys?
Hi, Stan. We joked about the California legislature tried to introduce you, and you weren't there. We're like, oh, no, they got him.
They got the stand.
we said California legislature, and then the sucking sound began.
Sounds like the assembly, frankly.
Yeah.
But anyway, thanks for having me on the show, you guys.
Yes.
I'm traveling, so if I happen to lose you, I'll call back in.
No sweat. The beauty of conference call lines, right? They're always there for you.
Yes, ma'am.
So, and My name is Aaron. So just so you have some voices to go with, yeah. Bill, say something.
Hi, Aaron.
Hello, Stan. Glad you made it.
So you've been watching this for how long?
Well, Michael Mish, Dr. Mish, and myself had met on a show, and he was so knowledgeable in, and he's been watching it for a lot longer than I have. And then this is about probably six months ago, and then we developed a relationship, and then Mike Ariza came to my office when I was in the state legislature and had done a really good job of summarizing the refinery end of it. I broke out in the oil field in 1975, so I have 50 years of experience in drilling, production, upstream and downstream. So the three of us had made a pretty good combination, and we came up with this. Looking at where we're going with our oil and gas production and our refining capacity, it was pretty simple to see that it's actually it is a risk to national security, and we really got worried. So we wrote a paper, and a professor did an incredible job, and so then here we are 6 months later trying to get the word out. And look, it's really a matter of national security, and I'm really worried. When you have Valero shutting down, and it Travis Air Force Base gets 100% of its fuel, a jet fuel from Valero, where's that going to come from? And then all of a sudden you look at the 40 some bases we have in California with which includes obviously, Air Force and China Lake and the other arms of the military, we have 40-some bases. And then we have Nevada, and part we're supplying. So what are we going to do? And then all of a sudden, and of course Russia knows this and China knows this. When they want to put a hurt on this, they drop a couple of those ships out, and guess what? We're in a gas crisis.
Yeah.
Not mm-hmm. just for the public, but for the military. And that's my concern.
We have to take a really quick break, but when we come back, let's start with Stan, because I'd like to hear, we'll give you 2 minutes to maybe switch to decaf, because I'd like to know what the other folks in the legislature are saying when you're bringing this.
It's a crisis?
When you're bringing this up, because I think I already know the answer, but we'll all switch to decaf. Going to take a really quick break. We have Mike Ariza here, who has been in the refinery business for a long time. We have Professor Michael Miche from USC, and we have Assemblyman Stan Ellis with us from the California Legislature. So that's our cast of characters today, and we're talking about the looming crisis in California with our refinery shutting down, which should alarm everyone, even if you don't live here. So we're going to come right back. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I'm going to do bad things, do it like it's nothing. Being bad has never felt so good. I'm going to do bad things, you won't see. Doing bad things to you.
Blame, you're about to give it, I'm about to take it. Yeah, we're going down in flames. What can we do when we're only human? Everybody makes mistakes. There's more than enough to go around. Blame, who said it first and who did it hurt? What the hell does it change? Why go there when I don't care? If you want to walk away,
it's about the best setup I got for you, Stan.
Yes.
Blame. So what's the response of your colleagues in the legislature when you bring up this topic?
Well, so there are 20 Republicans and 60 Democrats, and unfortunately, the Democrats, when I bring it up offline, they agree. But, and I'm on the Natural Resources Committee, and there are bills that try to come forth that want to penalize oil companies for emissions. And we put out the cleanest.
Uh-oh. The cone of silence is captured.
I'm sorry.
You broke up there, Stan. Go ahead and repeat what you were saying.
Yeah. So anyway, we put out the cleanest oil and gas in the world. And what's happening is that the green agenda and greenhouse gases emissions that the Democrats have put forth have made it appear that oil and gas is dirty. However, if that's the case, then why do we make 6,000 products from oil and gas and oil and gas derivatives? So the green agenda has ruined the oil and gas industry in California. And I'm the first one to say that we're going to run out of oil and gas for some future generation. Why wouldn't we, instead of spending $1 billion on high-speed rail, put it into fusion and put it into other alternative, you know, wind and solar a little piece, but fusion and fission and micronuclear are the real answers long-term. Mm-hmm. But until we get there, we need oil and gas. And so there's just no common sense. There's not a common sense transition. And to answer your question, the legislators, the Democratic legislators really don't get it, and they don't care to get it because they fall under Newsom's agenda, and his agenda is greenhouse gas, unfortunately.
Okay. So swing over to Professor Miché. So you've been watching this since 1974. So the fact that they're not getting it doesn't mean the results aren't going to happen.
Well,
to the state,
yes. I mean, so let's look at some data, okay? Just make it as simple as we can. So at one time, California was the world's leading producer and exporter of petroleum.
Wow.
We were number one in the world. Now, that was a long time ago, right? Even before I started following this industry. And we have the fifth largest oil reserves in the United States. So the petroleum industry, if you really sort of think about California, you have the gold rush, and then the next rush was the black gold rush, which was the oil rush, which began in around 1869 and went all the way into, you know, the 20th century. So petroleum played a huge part in the economic development of California. Now, the petroleum industry itself represents about 8% of the California GDP. But it's the first 8%. As Stan mentioned, you have petroleum in 6,000 products. If you have an EV, which is great, you're driving down the road on asphalt that's made from petroleum. By the way, your tires are made from petroleum, and your EV has about 4 or 5 quarts of oil in it to lubricate the parts that are moving. So, you know, it's one of these products that is essential to any modern economy. So we had this very significant and dominant position for years and years and years. And at one time, we had 40 refineries in the state, and now we're going to be down to 7. And probably by the end of 2027, probably down to 6. So we're looking at a decline. And some of the statistics that Mike Ariza mentioned, to put it more in sort of consumer terms, we're losing somewhere between 6.2 and 9 million gallons of gasoline a day in in-state production. That's how much our production is falling by a day. And so the question is, where is the state going to make that up? And the only answer that they have is, well, through imports. Great. They'll tell you that, but they won't tell you what the price effect of that will be. So in all instances, we're looking at price increases and the potential of supply shortages, because as Stan mentioned, you know, you're going to have 3 to 5 times more tankers coming across the Pacific Ocean. Anything can happen. A typhoon, labor disputes, geopolitical events. Anything.
Mm-hmm. Shuts off the supply.
To disrupt that supply.
Yeah.
And by the way, we run on about a 14-day supply in the state. That's what we run on. Now, the statistics will tell you that around...
Say that again? We have about 14 days...
Spare supply,
okay, in the state.
Oh, that's terrific.
At any one... Yeah, that's 14 days. That's it, though.
Yeah.
That's all you got. Okay? Now, what happens is, when it hits around 12 to 13 days, it's almost like a hockey stick in terms of the bend in the curve. It literally goes like 80 degrees straight up in price. So at around 12 to 13 days supply, that price is going to increase by at least $1 to $1.50 a gallon. So that's how tight supply is, and that's how fragile this inbound supply system will be. And that has implications for the California consumer, and it has broader implications for the following. A, Arizona. They get about 48% of their gas comes from California, slightly less now.
Wow.
Nevada, totally messed up. Over 80% of their fuel comes from California.
Oh, shoot.
And as Stan and Mike and I, we tried to bring out in our study, you know, not only are they affected, this California contagion effect will propagate on out into national security. And so, you know, we have a significant vulnerability that's being created by the loss of these refineries. And I might add, the loss of the North-South pipeline, which is generally called the Crimson Pipeline, which is collapsing as we speak. So these are some of these profound implications of these policies. And what we tried to do in our study is just simply bring them forward factually. You know, there's no real political agenda other than here's the numbers. And the numbers really aren't looking very good, and the numbers don't lie.
Hmm. Now, you said there was roughly, what, 6 or 7 refineries left in California. With the rest of these going out, are those refineries able to increase capacity, or are they kind of maxed out?
Well, Mike, I'll give the first answer, and Mike will give you the micro answer to that. I'll backfill it. They're pretty much maxed out. You can't run a refinery at 100% capacity. We all know that. The physics do not allow that. So when a refinery is running, say, between 88, 87, say, to 92, that's a really good sweet spot for the utilization. They don't really have a lot of upside on that because of the physics involved and safety and just the chemical processes involved in that refinery. So we're tapped out. Now, we can change the mix. It's what do you want? If you want more gasoline, then I'm going to produce less jet fuel and less diesel fuel. If I want more jet fuel, then I have to produce less diesel fuel and less gasoline. So the refiners, as a result of the policies, are really boxed into a corner. And so, like any refiner, they try to optimize their product mix. It comes out what we call the barrel, the products that come out of the barrel, okay? That slate, they try to optimize that, given the quality of crude that they have in the equipment they're running. And so I'll let Mike Azia walk you through the details of that.
You have, I don't know if you have the numbers, but... When speaking about the military, what percentage, what usage do they demand of the total output of what we're refining right now? How much of that has to go to the military? I mean, they use jet fuel, they use diesel, they use gas.
And this is in peacetime.
Yeah, exactly. So what are they using now, I mean, as far as a percentage of output?
I would have to look that up. I think that's in our study, and I think it's around 8 to 12% of the output.
Part of the problem, so I'll interrupt here for a second. Part of the problem is it's classified. So we don't know what their usage is, but we can only guess.
Oh,
that makes sense.
Yeah, it's about 8 to 12% what we know about. For example, we know that Travis burns through about 200,000 gallons of jet fuel a day just on normal operations. That's just nothing happening in the world, nothing extraordinary going on, nothing extraordinarily planned in terms of training or any types of exercises. So they go through about 200,000 gallons.
And that's one base out of 40?
That's one base out of 40. Depending on how you count them, you get up into the 50s.
Yeah.
You know, you have small bases, you have big bases, you have, you know, all sorts of little things. And then you have, let's not forget, that's just California. You have significant assets, military assets, based in Nevada and in Arizona. Significant Air Force assets based in both of those states. And in the case of Nevada, pretty much all of it is coming from California. So this entire state is pretty much dependent on whatever happens in California. And whatever price increases are in California, there's like a 97% correlation that the price will increase in Nevada. So we have a profound effect on the neighboring states and on national security.
Mike's got his calculator open. What's your calculator open for, Mike? What are you doing over here?
Oh, I know how much barrels jet fuel Valero produces a day, but I forgot how many gallons that is. So let's multiply that. Back to the professor's point, you know, Travis, if something happens in Taiwan or some other significant theater opens up, you're looking at, a KC-10 extender and a C-5 take roughly 100,000 gallons of fuel. Valero makes about 600,000 gallons of fuel a day.
Oh, boy.
And that's just one sortie between a fuel extender, 100,000 gallons right there. As far as, you know, Arizona, Phoenix is totally dependent on us. And when you look at the percentages in Nevada, well, you're looking at 80, 88%, different numbers. The bottom line is Reno and Vegas are totally dependent on us. So the three major cities, they're dependent on us. So we start running into shortages, which we will do. They're in trouble, prices, supplies. With regard to the refineries, Valero actually produces more gasoline per barrel of oil than any of the other refineries in the state. It was designed different. It was built differently. So you're going to lose a lot with Valero. Phillips 66 is already down in Wilmington. That takes us down to 8 refineries that are actually up of any size or capacity that are running. Valero goes down. Originally, they were slated to go down in April. Looks like they're going down next month. You're going to lose, like Professor said, the whole supply of jet fuel comes from Valero. And then a bunch of real-world events that have occurred in the last 2 to 3 months since we started embarking on this, me and the assemblyman and Professor. You've had a major fire at the Chevron refinery in El Segundo. You had a tanker, a fuels oil tanker bound for Singapore, hijacked in the Indian Ocean. You had a leak on the Olympic gasoline pipeline in Washington, shutting that down for a little while. So the other thing is storms. When I ran the Valero refinery, there were 3 separate times where I actually cut back Valero's crude oil rate because storms in Alaska were holding up the Alaska North Slope tankers from getting to us. A couple of times we cut from 135,000 barrels down to 100. One time we were about 6 hours away from totally shutting down because the storms were really severe and we were not getting enough. We can't run on 24,000 barrels a day of crude, San Joaquin Valley crude by itself.
Right.
You have to have supplements. When my wife went to visit her family, Hong Kong, Guangzhou, those big cities in China, typhoon went through, shut down the shipping for 2 or 3 days. So any of these real world events just leaves us extremely vulnerable, leaves the military vulnerable, and like Stan was pointing out, it puts the whole country at risk. If the West Coast is taken out, if our Air Force and Navy can't get airborne, it's all up and down. We know how long the state of California is up and down the coast. then you're affecting Arizona, you're affecting Nevada. We're in serious trouble. And that was initially why we got together on this, was take away the risk to our civilian population, because there will be major civil unrest. We saw how everybody reacted to toilet paper shortages.
Yeah.
When they get on their little app, you know, Gas Buddy or whatever, and say, okay, there's gasoline over here. They go over there. There's
and
no gasoline. And they're going to go crazy. And, you know, all of our metropolitan areas, L.A., San Francisco, Sacramento, you know, Phoenix, people are going to totally go crazy. And the military is going to suffer. The military is, it's been a risk since like 2 or 3 years ago when they shut down Marathon and put Rodeo in, the ConocoPhillips Rodeo refinery, put it on clean fuels, the diesel. That gasoline, that jet fuel, all that production took about 20% out right then 2 or 3 years ago. Phillips 66 in Wilmington took out another roughly 9 to 10%, and Valero's another 10 to 12%. So when Valero finally pulls the plug, between 40 and 43% of our gasoline is going to be imported across the ocean. And with all those things I mentioned, real-world events that have occurred,
yeah.
I forgot about the fire on the cargo ship in Los Angeles. It was so severe they had to pull it away from the port. You damage the port of Los Angeles, we can't get the tankers in.
Can't get them in.
Well, crippling us will be child's play.
And like the professor says, you know, you're down to 12-day supply. Price jumps up $1.50 a gallon.
We'll be lucky if that's all
there
is.
Those numbers better. Well, we get down to 8 days, 7 days. You know, that's where all three of us just totally concur. $8 a gallon is minimum.
Yeah.
The minimum what it's going to be within a few months.
And on that cheerful note, I have to be the fun killer and tell us that we have to take a break.
Yeah, I want to talk about location of these refineries, too, and how it affects regionally the supply and demand.
Sure.
When we return.
Sure.
And just so you have something to stew on during the commercial break, the terrific job that we're doing of making our own special fuel in California to make our own special air that is only over our own special heads is a 1% improvement. All this, we have hamstrung ourselves and walled ourselves off from the world for a 1% cleaner fuel. God, I can totally tell. Break time. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us. Belt wrapped around our minds and the regulation.
Yep. So Mike, with these refineries, I would imagine the Valero supplies the gas for Northern California, or does it really matter where they are, or are they very regional where their supply goes?
Typically, it's regional. With the El Segundo fire, I know a tanker was rerouted from the Gulf Coast away from the East Coast to Southern California, and some jet fuel was routed to Southern California from here. Once Valero goes down, that flexibility is gone. You'll only have Chevron and the PBF refinery Martinez.
So that's where you get into shortages.
Exactly.
There just isn't any.
It's just not there. It's not available.
Right. Wow. Yeah, there's going to be some unrest when that happens. I mean, people depend on their vehicles every day. You expect to go out, turn the key, and go. But if you can't get fuel, you can't go to work, you can't buy groceries.
Well, it impedes all the manufacturing and everything. So let's swerve over into the Assemblyman Ellis Lane here. Stan, any Any recognition of this by the California legislature, the people that are say, watching the regulators that are squeezing our lives into...
No. What's happening is they're so driven by this green agenda that they will not... All they want is tighter regulations. The Democrats put forth Bill 237, which allowed about 2,000 drilling permits in Kern County and exempted them from CEQA to get to work right away. But 2,000 wells over the next 10 years is a drop in the bucket, 40,000-50,000 barrels. But Aaron, I want to go back to your reformulated fuel comment that you made earlier.
Oh yeah,
you know, we're getting. So years ago, we spent billions of dollars getting our refineries from low sulfur spec and reformulated fuels, and they call it CARBOB here. And now we're getting so-called CARBOB from India, and we don't have regulatory agencies over there watching how clean they put out their how clean their emissions are. And then all of a sudden, we're putting this fuel and crude into ships that burn number six fuel oil. And number six fuel oil is loaded with polynuclear aromatic hydrocarbons like phenanthracene, cryosine, benzopyrene. And what happens is they put these out in the atmosphere, and all of a sudden 20 miles out when they get out from the port, they kick over to low-sulfur diesel. It's hypocrisy at its best.
Boy,
so
no
so
kidding.
You think we might get 1% better air? No. We're getting worse air. So I'm sorry, I had to go back to that, Aaron.
No, that's okay, because it makes no sense. The air above us doesn't, I mean, there, even children, you know, you don't even have to have this in school, because everyone knows
right.
The air moves around. So the air over California isn't the air over California for very long. So
the jet stream comes right across us.
Jet stream comes
right across us from the Pacific.
I guarantee you the air that was blowing me off the trail with the dog right before the radio station is in Ohio now. I mean,
but
Mike's not going to use any fuel going home at all. It's just going to blow him right back to Chico.
But back to your question about nothing's happening. I can put forth any type of legislation I want, but unless I'm a Democrat, it's not going to go anywhere.
God.
This is Professor Michelle.
Yeah,
I can add to that.
Please.
So in hearings back in June, the then chairwoman of CARB, California Air Resource Board, was asked directly, does CARB measure the effect of greenhouse gas emissions for the sources of oil, foreign sources of oil, at the wellhead, and did they measure the greenhouse gas emissions for all the tankers coming across the Pacific? And the answer was, no, we don't do that. So if you think about it, you're adding a significant amount of greenhouse gas emissions due to the 3 to 5 time increase in the number of tankers coming across the Pacific. I mean, it just doesn't seem to make sense to any of us that look at the math and understand the numbers. So the logic is really perverted. Let's not produce oil here, and let's shut down the refineries, but let's import it from places like Brazil. Well, I'll give you an example for Brazil, right, because it has to do with the AB 30 legislation for ethanol. So Brazil produces ethanol from sugarcane. Collectively, the estimates are that Brazil has burned 24 million acres of rainforest and jungles for agricultural production, a significant amount of which is sugarcane for ethanol, which, guess who imports that ethanol? California. So not only are we importing oil from Brazil, and their oil, by the way, is all deep water offshore oil, same way with oil off Santa Barbara coast in federal waters is all deep shore off. But nonetheless, you know, there's a bit of a hypocrisy among the policymakers and the regulators. Well, you know, we won't do with the full life cycle calculation of emissions. And that's an important factor for us. And we are working on that right now.
to get that information to them to make, I mean, I don't want to speed to the conclusion here, but like, what do you think will tip the scale for people who have their hand on the lever? Like, is there anything you can see?
No, I think Stan summarized it nicely. You know, he's a Republican, and there's a limited number of Republicans and a supermajority of Democrats. And as in Stan's case, in private, I've had Democrats come up to me and say, you know, Professor Mache, we really appreciate your work. We understand your numbers. They are alarming, but we can't really do much about it. And that's all they'll say. The best thing we can do is bring these issues, which we try to do in our study, Stan, Mike, and I, try to do in our study, bring these issues to the public, bring them to people like you who can get the message out in the public, and then get them to Washington, D.C., to policymakers at the federal level. With the amount of reductions we're looking at in gasoline, the vulnerability to the supply chain that's being created, the number of emissions that are going to result from massive amounts of oil tankers coming across the Pacific. I mean, they'll be parked outside of the waters trying to get in to unload, and heck, you can probably step across them to get to Hawaii. So that's a national issue. And so bringing it to the attention of national policymakers, such as the president, I think is in the best interest of not only California, but also the nation. So we're hopeful that President Trump and his administration takes a serious look at the work that's being done out here.
And that's the biggest part of the problem that we've been working on. With Phillips 66 going down, Valero, we're done. We're at 40-plus percent, 30, 35% of our jet fuel. That's where the vulnerability lies. And these refineries, you can't just start them back up. Valero is extremely complex.
If they shut one down, I mean, you can't just turn the key and turn it back on.
It could take weeks to months to start one back up. And the big problem is qualified personnel. You know, when I worked at Flying J, this is the part that's kind of ironic, was the Democrats back then, Barbara Boxer and Lockyer, they saw the logic in a 3 to 4% loss of gasoline production in California, which Flying J represented. They told Shell, we can't have that. The supplies could have a problem. The prices, you know, the price spikes in California are already paid too much. They figured it out at that time.
That's sad. Barbara Boxer is the smart one.
Well, that's the thing. And they basically forced Shell to sell the refinery to Flying J. But back to my point was a lot of the Shell employees had already set to transfer. A couple came up to Martinez back then, you know, transfer to Texas. Some just retired. And you lose that. You know, the longer it sits, the more you're retired. Once you've got it down and everything's cleared and you don't need operators, you know, they lay them off. They retire, transfer to other facilities. The dynamic with Valero that no one knows or understands is the fact that Valero, with its complexity of within the control room, you have one control room running eight major units. In another refinery, you have one control room and operators running one unit. So Valero, you know, you can get somebody to come help you that's got 30 or 40 years experience, but typically they'll have experience on the CAT unit or the crude unit or the sulfur unit.
Like that's like a
siloed. Right, like islands within the refinery.
Yeah.
At Valero, you're starting them all up at the same time, and that's where Valero is very problematic, because once enough qualified people have left Valero, you're going to find, I mean, me, it's been a while, I could probably do it, but, you know, you try to find other qualified people in the whole country
who can run all those different
facets
all at the same time.
At the same time.
And how many personnel does it take to run a Valero?
Well, they have 400. I mean, you get down to skeleton crew, probably, you know, 150. You have teams running through. Valero is unique because you did maintenance and you did operations. You did both because
right.
It was non-union. But the thing about the qualifications of running it is you got to have time.
Mm-hmm.
I learned how to run it from very qualified ladies and gentlemen that knew the CAT unit, knew the coker, but they, you know, they worked that and ran all of them at the same time. So, you know, it took four or five years before I was extremely proficient at it. So in another refinery, it takes you a year or two before you can go in a control room, you know, and start running one of their units. So
right. This
isn't something where you jump in, you learn how to run the drive-through, and you go.
Well,
this is
plus
very complex.
You blow up the industry, and, you know, people aren't going to necessarily want to flock back to California so they can get So they can get...
When they're gone, they're gone.
Yeah, ruined again.
And the thing
it's like
is...
like our sawmills. I mean, you look at how many industries we have... where we have done this.
Budweiser,
and now people are like...
Budweiser in Solano County is going down.
I forgot about that. There's that.
That's two big employers in Solano County, just Solano County alone. And then going back to your question about refineries and capacity, I was told a long time ago, and this is absolutely true, what a refinery does, they come back online from a shutdown, they put it up to 6,000 RPM, and they cut it back, throttle back 500 RPM, and you hold that for 3 years. That's their maxed out. They are permitted. There's permitted levels. Valero's originally was 135 when I was there. I think it's 145 now, 145,000 barrels a day. They can't.
Dang, we're out of time. Sorry. We have to go to commercials. I was all captivated.
And we're out.
Okay, bye.
Buns and donuts and fruitcake with no nuts, so good you could go nuts.
You're going to have all those things when you get home.
No, now. I want a ball. I want a party. Pink macaroons and a million balloons and performing baboons and give it to me. Now, I want the world. I want the whole world. I want to lock it all up in my pocket. It's my bar of chocolate. Give it to me now. I want today. I want tomorrow. I want to wear 'em like braids in my hair. And